This is Glenn Coble, and you're listening to On the Air. And I'm cutting our theme music off early, if I can. If I can figure this out, how to do this. Anyway, hang on one second there. We have Fred Malone with us, and I'm unfortunately not figuring out how to cut this music off. Hang on. Well, I guess I'm not going to be able to. Fred, are you there?
I'm with you.
Okay, hang on. We're going to have to wait till the music ends.
I'm tapping my foot.
There we go. I think I figured it out.
I think you got it. Okay. I want to mention one last thing about Teddy Roosevelt before we move on. We were talking about Yellowstone Park. He had become really good friends with Gilbert Pinchot and John Muir, especially John Muir. And I can recall one particular instance where he and John Muir snuck away from the Secret Service detail when they were out in Yellowstone and went on a couple-of-day camping trip, and no one knew where the President of the United States was, other than he was somewhere in Yellowstone National Park.
I think I saw that in Ken Burns' thing on National Parks. Yeah,
yeah, quite possibly, yeah.
Crazy.
He had a habit of doing that.
Yeah.
He was very much his own man, and I think a lot of it had to do with his days when he had the ranch out west, you know, with his years as a cowboy, you know, so to speak, out there.
He was definitely a Westerner.
One of a kind, whose likes we shall never see again, I'm afraid.
I don't think so.
All right, moving on.
Yeah.
Another Ohioan elected president in 1908 to become the 27th president, William Howard Taft from Cincinnati, who was a Republican. And his first term, which turned out to be his only term, he was opposed by, somebody we've heard before, William Jennings Bryan, giving it a third shot.
He wouldn't give up, would he?
A third shot at the presidency, again running as a Democrat. This time, the popular vote not too much in Bryan's favor again. 7,679,000 to 6,409,000, so a pretty good stomping there on the popular vote. And with the Electoral College, 321 to 162, so very clear-cut victory for Taft in that particular case against old William Jennings Bryan, who I have to again mention was defeated twice by President McKinley.
He was quite an orator, though, was he not?
He was. Yes. He was. He really was, yeah.
But not good enough to win.
Not good enough to win, obviously, yeah. So, William Howard Taft then runs for re-election in 4 years, in 1912. And, of course, not so good there because Teddy reappears. He's not happy with his self-appointed successor. I don't know whether I mentioned that before, but Teddy wanted Taft to be his heir apparent in 1908 when he won that election, so he supported him wholeheartedly. But into his term, Teddy didn't like what Taft was doing. He wasn't following his policies and the suggestions that he has made. So he decides, after some pushing, that he will run as a candidate in 1912 against William Howard Taft. Mm-hmm. He did not get the Republican nomination, however.
No.
So that went to Taft again. And the election got kind of dicey, I guess you could say.
Okay.
His opponent then turned out to be Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson was running as a Democrat, Taft again running as a Republican, and Roosevelt created the new party called the Progressive Party, or more affectionately known as the Bull Moose Party. So in that election of 1912, Wilson garnered 6,286,000 popular vote, Roosevelt 4,126,000, and Taft only 3,483,000. So the incumbent president was at the bottom of the three candidates.
That had to be a blow.
I'm sure it really did.
Yeah.
Some say that Roosevelt, you know, probably affected the election and cost the Republicans the election. However, Wilson did win the Electoral College by a substantial margin.
Oh, okay.
He had 435 electoral votes compared to 88 for Roosevelt and only 8 for Taft.
Oh, my.
So Taft took a pretty good shellacking in that election. Now, I will add that Taft really never wanted to be president. He was basically talked into that by Roosevelt. Taft always Taft was always a judge, and he wanted to be a Supreme Court judge. He wanted to be Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. So he really didn't want to be president. And moving fast forward a little bit, he was later appointed Chief Justice of the Supreme Court by Warren Harding, another Ohioan.
Sure.
And ended up serving, I think, 8 or 9 years on the Supreme Court as Chief Justice. So he ended up his political career where he really wanted to be,
okay.
And I think kind of pushed the presidency in the way back corner of his life and didn't think too much about it after that. But it was unfortunate that the sitting president had to come in third in a contest of three people at the time.
Well, it told him where he
things
stood.
Things happen. So anyway, we've got Woodrow Wilson, who's now the 28th president of the United States. He serves his 4 years and decides to run for a second term, which he did in 1916. He was opposed by a gentleman by the name of Charles Evans Hughes, who was a Republican. In that particular election, Wilson won by the total was 9,129,000 to 8,538,000.
Wow.
Not a particularly big margin.
But a lot of votes.
A lot of votes. Account now, again, we're getting close to 20 million people voting. Just a few short years before, we were 11 million. So the population is growing. The states are growing. In the Electoral College, though, pretty close, 277 to 254.
Yeah.
And again, I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that the war was looming. World War I was looming.
Sure.
There were a lot of things going on. Wilson was not particularly popular, so I think that had a lot of effect on the outcome of the election. But still, he got his second term, served during World War I. And then in 1920, another Ohioan emerges upon the scene, very well known to people here in Marion, Warren G. Harding.
Sure.
Bursts upon the scene. He was a sitting senator at the time that he was chosen to be the Republican nominee for president. A very hotly contested Republican convention, I might add. There is a book out called 1920, which chronicles the 1920 Republican convention. And Warren Harding was really not the first choice. He wasn't the second choice.
Huh.
He wasn't the third choice.
Oh, my.
He was way down on the list. There were a lot of other people, and he was basically a compromise candidate.
Huh. Where was the election? Do you know where the convention was held?
If I remember correctly, it was in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
And again, I'm pulling that from memory, so
okay.
Don't quote me, but I do. I think it was in Chicago. But anyway, the Republicans had a tough convention, as well as the Democrats. The Democrats also had a hard time getting a front runner to the forefront of the nomination, and that after several ballots shook out to be a guy by the name of James M. Cox, who was from Dayton, Ohio.
Hmm.
Hey, so now we've got two candidates
from
for president in 1920, both from Ohio. Now, we all know that Warren Harding was the editor of the Marion Star.
That's right.
Owner, publisher, editor. And James Cox, interestingly enough, was the editor and publisher of the Dayton Daily News.
Huh.
So it didn't make any difference who you voted for in 1920 for president of the United States. You were going to get a newspaper man from the state of Ohio.
Yeah.
Didn't matter.
Now, was his last name spelled C-O-C-A or K-O-C-H?
No, it was C-O-X.
C-O-X.
Yep,
okay.
C-O-X. And interestingly enough, another interesting fact in that 1920 election, you'll never guess who his vice presidential candidate was, James Cox.
Oh, I have no idea.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Oh, my. I didn't know that.
When Roosevelt was chosen, a lot of people in the country said, who?
Who?
Who is this young upstart? Because I believe he was only 28 years old at the time.
And was he a nephew of the former Roosevelt?
Cousin.
Cousin, okay.
Right, they were cousins. They weren't, that was their relationship.
A lot of people thought that he was a son, but that's not right.
So here you go, 1920. Roosevelt, I think, who had maybe already served maybe one term in the New York State Legislature, I think, by that time. He was very, very new to politics.
He was
very,
a
very
pup.
New to politics,
yeah.
Right. And then we'll talk about him a little bit later on because he goes on to do bigger and better things.
Yeah, a little.
So they get to the election, and Harding wins by a huge margin.
Oh.
Popular vote, 16,152,000 to 9,147,000. So he wins by, 7 million votes.
Yeah.
Almost kind of sounds a little bit like
that. Yeah, sounds familiar.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And in the Electoral College, 404 to 127.
Okay.
So he was a clear-cut winner. And his slogan was a return to normalcy. because we had just came out of
familiar.
World War One. a lot of Wilson's time in office had been spent not being seen by the public because he'd had a stroke.
And also the war was going on.
World War One was going on. He'd had a stroke. No one was too certain what his health was. His wife was keeping him hidden.
Uh-huh.
Hardly anybody in the White House ever saw him. In fact, she was oftentimes called Madam President.
Huh.
Because everything came from her mouth and not his.
I gotcha.
But he did recover from his stroke. The unfortunate part about Warren Harding was he died in office.
Yeah.
On August the 2nd of 1923, while on a trip to Alaska, the only sitting president to tour Alaska, which I believe still at that time was a territory. I don't think it had become a state yet. Obviously, it had not. But he was the only president to tour the territory of Alaska. Went by train and was really feeling ill when they left Washington. He'd gained quite a bit of weight since having been elected president. He was a big golfer, and he hadn't been able to play a lot of golf like he did when he was a sitting senator. Never wanted to be president. He was content to be a sitting senator. His wife and some other politicians kind of pushed him into it. But anyway, he wasn't very well when he left on that trip. Got considerably ill when he was in Alaska. By the time they got to San Francisco, he could barely walk. However, he did on his own volition, for the sake of the public, walk into the San Francisco hotel on his own motion and got sick. Sicker, and died then on August the 2nd of 1923.
Now, I was listening to a show about him the other night, and there are innuendos that maybe his wife killed him.
That's been an ongoing conversation topic for years and years and years.
Yeah.
Never proven.
Well, she might have had reason.
Well, that's another story for another
time. I know.
But he did have heart issues,
and that
basically is what killed him, was a heart attack.
All right.
I think we're close to a break.
Okay. Yes, we are. We're very close, and we'll be right back.
Charlie, have you ever been visited by a ghost on Christmas Eve like Ebenezer Scrooge in A Christmas Carol?
Well, no, I can't say I have, but I have had similar experiences. I saw Hillary Clinton on TV reading 'Twas the Night Before Christmas.
How is that similar?
Well, it's like being visited by the ghost of Christmas past, present, and yet to come, all at the same time. And old Ebenezer Evers was not happy. Bah! Humbug! Bah! Hillary!
Happy holidays from WWGH.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT. G-O-A-T. Acronym. Stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Well, we're back here with Fred Malone.
All right, so Harding's vice president was Calvin Coolidge from Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
And well, let me read this. This is kind of interesting. Calvin Coolidge, vice president of the United States, went to bed at 9 o'clock as usual on the night of August the 2nd, 1923. At his father's home in Plymouth, Vermont, where he was enjoying a short vacation. At 2:30 in the morning, he was awakened and told that President Harding was dead. Coolidge hastily dressed and went downstairs to the parlor, which was lighted by a flickering kerosene lamp, no electricity. There he was addressed for the first time as Mr. President, the words being spoken by his father.
Hmm.
A copy of the Constitution was found, and Calvin took the oath of office administered by the elder Coolidge, who was the notary public. Coolidge then went to bed.
Hmm. Kind of unceremonious.
Counter surmises Calvin Coolidge to a T.
Does it really?
Doesn't
okay.
It? Yeah. So Coolidge finishes out the balance of Harding's term and decides to run for re-election in 1924.
Mm-hmm.
Old Silent Cal, in his first term on his own, was opposed by John W. Davis, a Democrat, and Robert M. La Follette, a progressive. So now we've got three guys running.
Was it still the Bull Moose people? Or?
Yes, it was still the same party that Roosevelt had brought in back in 1912, just reinstated, so to speak. The popular vote at the time, 15,725 for Coolidge, 8,386,000 for Davis, and 4,842,000 for the Bull Moose candidate.
Okay.
So clearly, you know, Coolidge won, no problem there. And the electoral vote, 382 to 136 to 13.
Hmm.
Coolidge, kind of an unspoken, soft-spoken individual, Not a whole lot really took place in his term. The only thing that happened basically during his term of office was his oldest son died in the White House from an infection that he had, if I remember correctly, they were playing basketball at the White House, Coolidge and his two sons, and his son had cut his foot or something. It became infected, and he died from blood poisoning.
Oh, my.
Coolidge decided not to run for a second term of his own and kind of left the political scene altogether. Mm. Known as Silent Cal.
Yeah.
Known as Silent Cal.
I just pulled up his picture. He's not a bad-looking man, very thin and dapper-looking.
And he loved to walk. He would take a walk every morning accompanied by a Secret Service agent that was assigned to him. Can't remember the Secret Service agent's name right now. But,
oh, you're forgiven.
Thank you. They always walked downtown Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. with just the two of them. Okay. He liked the window shop. He would oftentimes see things in shop windows. Of course, the shops were closed because he was always out walking at 5 and 6 o'clock in the morning. But he would point out those things to the Secret Service agent, make notes himself, and then would have someone later on go back and buy them for his wife. Then comes 1928, and we've got Herbert Hoover, mm-hmm. who decides to run for president. Hoover had been in various positions in the government. I think he served in the cabinet under Calvin Coolidge. His first term and only term, as it turns out, he was opposed by Alfred E. Smith, who was governor of New York and a Democrat. Yeah. The popular vote in that particular election, 21,400,000 to Hoover and 15,000,000 to Alfred E. Smith, so a very clear-cut victory on his part.
Over 35 million voters.
And we're getting larger and larger all the time. The electoral vote, 444 to 87, so again, a very sound election, no problem there. Again, the problem with Hoover is that the crash of 1929 arises, and Hoover towns sprang up all over the country, the unemployment rate, people out of work, people didn't have anything to eat, the depression is raging, and Hoover wasn't able to do much about it. So he was defeated in his reelection bid in 1932, by the now 32nd president of the United States, that fellow that ran in 1920 as a vice president candidate and got beat, mm-hmm. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a Democrat from New York.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that first term, his opponent was Herbert Hoover, who was a Republican incumbent. Popular vote didn't go so well for Hoover, 22,800,000 for Roosevelt and 15,700,000 for Hoover. And now we've got, 37,000, almost 38 million people voting now.
Yeah.
Electoral College vote, 472 to 59.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So a decisive victory. People were obviously venting their frustrations on Herbert Hoover for what had happened. And, of course, Franklin Roosevelt had proposed a new deal with all of these things that we're going to put into motion. Put people back to work, the 3C, the things like that, the WPA, all the Work Progress Administration, the Civilian Conservation Corps, all the things that would create jobs, put people to work, sponsored, of course, by the government, mm-hmm. but at least they were working, they were doing things, they were building roads, they were building, doing conservation work, they were building, helping with state parks, with national parks, just all types of things. So in 1936, when he ran again, as a Democrat for his second term against Alf Landon, who was also from the New York area, a Republican. That didn't go so well for Mr. Landon. Popular vote, 27,700,000 to 16,600,000. Again, a big substantial increase from the previous election. With totals there, we got 37, over 40 million people voting now. And the electoral vote there, 523 to 8.
Ooh.
So a very decisive victory there.
No questions.
No question about it. Again, things are starting to look better. The economy is recovering with the programs that Roosevelt had put into place. Again, he had a good Congress. He had the right party in control in both of the houses, so he was able to get stuff done. So in 1940, unprecedented, he runs for a third term.
Hmm.
Again, mm-hmm. as a Democrat. And this time his opponent is Wendell Willkie,
mm-hmm.
a Republican. And a little closer this time, the popular vote for Franklin Roosevelt, or his third term attempt, 27 million to 22 million for Wendell Willkie. It just keeps growing. It's almost 50 million people now, with the Electoral College vote coming in 449 to 82. So people are still very happy with Roosevelt. Now, what happens when 1944 rolls along? We're in the middle of World War II.
We sure are. Yeah.
So Roosevelt runs for an unprecedented fourth term as a Democrat. His opponent this time around is Thomas Dewey, a Republican. Mm-hmm. Popular vote now a little bit closer. Even though the war is raging, it's getting towards the end, and I think people are getting a little bit tired. Popular vote, 25,600,000 to 22 million. Mm-hmm. Still a concisive victory, but
a
lot less. Yeah. A lot less, right. And again, we've got that huge amount of people voting. Electoral vote then, 432 to 99. So still a decisive victory, no question about it.
Now, did they were they able to vote from the trenches?
You know, I'm not sure whether they had the privilege of voting then, like they do now overseas. I'm
by
not
mail.
Sure. That's a question I can't answer.
Okay.
I would probably say no.
Yeah.
And you will notice that it was down a little bit.
It was. That's why I asked. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking that probably active service members were not able to vote then.
Yeah. It would have been tough. Yeah.
But what happened then in April of 1945, just a few months after the inauguration, Franklin Roosevelt died in office while he was down at Warm Springs, Georgia, taking a little respite.
I've been there.
And so, of course, his vice president at the time, who had just been taken on the vice presidential ticket in 1944, was Harry S. Truman from Missouri.
Yeah.
So, again, big thing here, the only president to be elected to four consecutive terms, and was succeeded then by Harry S. Truman, his vice president.
How long did you say that his fourth term lasted before?
Just a few months.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, just a couple months. Yeah, because he died in April, and I think they were still inaugurating in March. Then. So basically, he didn't even hardly last a month.
Yeah.
From that time.
Wow.
Interesting thing about Truman. Truman again was not anybody's first choice for vice president. He was a sitting senator at the time. Was very happy in that position. And had to be kind of cajoled into running on the ticket with Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much told by Roosevelt that, or by the party chair, that he didn't want to be the person that cost Franklin Roosevelt the election.
Yeah.
So, and I think that probably that might have been just enough to sway the margin towards Roosevelt against Dewey, because Dewey was very popular at the time. And Dewey's, Dewey's. Vice presidential candidate at that time was governor of Ohio at the time.
Huh.
Yeah, so very interesting backstory there. So 1948 rolls around. Truman has basically served practically a whole term already because he succeeded Roosevelt very, very shortly after the election. So he's already got pretty much one term under his belt, but he decides to run for one term of his own. And that's in 1948. His opponent, again, Thomas Dewey, the fellow that ran against Roosevelt back in 1944.
Now, everybody knows that Dewey won that, though, right?
Well, not
at least that's what the newspaper said.
Right. There, and a lot of people don't know this, but there were two other candidates in that 1948 election.
Oh, I didn't
know
that. Yeah.
Here's a name that you'll probably remember from senatorial past, J. Strom Thurmond.
Sure.
Who was in the a member of the States' Rights Party in the election of 1948, and Harry Wallace, who was a progressive, still picking up that old Bull Moose Progressive Party, was a fourth candidate. So we got four people running for president in 1948.
Yeah, Strom Thurmond would never last.
Strom Thurmond, the longest-serving member of the U.S. Senate. I think he was 99.
Yeah, he was
finally
very old.
Finally left office from the U.S. Senate, right, later on, many, many years later. But in that particular election, the popular vote was as follows. Truman won by 24,105,000. Dewey had 21,900,000. Thurmond had 1,169,000, and Wallace had 1,156,000, with the Electoral College vote going 303 to 189 to 39 to 0.
Huh.
Truman then decided he did not want to run for a second term of his own, because he'd already served almost 8 years in total anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, I can't remember off the top of my head, when the constitutional amendment was passed that limited the president to two terms. I don't remember.
I don't remember the date.
But that's happening somewhere in this time frame.
Yes.
But Truman did decide that he didn't want to run for a second term, which he could have, because the first term was not his. He didn't, you know, he succeeded someone there, so he could have run for another term. But he decided not to. And after the inauguration took place than for our new president, Dwight D. Eisenhower. Truman and Bess got in the car and drove back to Independence, Missouri.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, I helped campaign for Dwight Eisenhower.
Well, you know what? Dwight Eisenhower, actually Harry Truman, was the first president that was serving in office when I was born.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, so from now on, I'm in the picture.
Yeah, me too.
But I thought it was interesting that no departure by Marine One from the grounds of the White House, no flying home in Air Force One. Harry and Bess just getting the old Studebaker and drove home.
Is that right? Did he have a Studebaker?
That's absolutely true.
Having been from South Bend, Indiana, where the home of the Studebaker, that's kind of interesting.
Yep, they drove back to Independence, Missouri, where they spent a number of years in happy retirement. Harry again taking his morning walks in the streets of Independence all by his lonesome.
I wonder if he ever suffered any nightmares or things like that because of what he had to do
Hiroshima
in Japan.
Nagasaki? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I think Harry knew the buck stopped there, and he knew it. And, if you didn't like it, if you couldn't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen.
Yeah, and
I don't think he ever gave it a second thought.
One of the things that good presidents seem to do is know that they have to make a decision. They can't do nothing.
Right. Can't sit on the fence. Can't sit on the fence. And no disrespect intended, but I've always thought a lot of Harry Truman.
Uh-huh.
And I had a beloved dog a number of years ago that I named Truman.
Really?
In Truman's honor.
Well, there's a great movie called The Truman Show, I believe it is.
Yeah.
Really enjoy that movie, but it has
nothing to do with Harry.
No.
Okay,
well, we're down to about 15 seconds.
Okay,
so
we'll hold on for Dwight D.
Okay, yeah, let's do that, and then we'll, is Dwight D. the last one in your...
Oh, no, I'm going to keep on going. I'm going up to Nixon, if I can get that far.
Okay, all right,
we'll be back. Can.
All right.
And a happy holidays to you and your family.
Oh, here we go again. It's not happy holidays. It's Merry Christmas.
That's okay for you, Charlie, but I like to cover all the holidays, so I say happy holidays.
You say happy holidays on Valentine's Day or Easter or St. Patrick's Day?
Well, no, I don't. What's the point?
Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays from WWGH Radio 107.1 FM.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
We're back here with Glenn Coble on the air with Fred Malone. Go ahead, Fred.
Okay, so we're up to 1952. As we said, Truman decided not to run for a second term, so he's left Washington. The 1952 election that elected the 34th president of the United States, Dwight D. Eisenhower, who was a Republican. His first term, his opposition was Adlai Stevenson, who was a Democrat. If I remember correctly, he was a sitting governor in Illinois. At the time.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And the popular vote in that particular election, 33,900,000 for Eisenhower, 27,300,000
wow.
for Stevenson. Now, boy, we got a lot of people voting.
Yeah, we
now.
Do.
60 million people are now voting.
Yeah, I don't think Alaska and Hawaii had yet joined,
but everybody else
was in.
Everybody else, all 48 states was in. And now we've got an electoral vote of 442-89 in that first trip around.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Dwight Eisenhower, very popular individual because of his service in World War II.
He was a hero, yeah.
He was a hero, commander of all the Allied forces, the man that laid out the plan for D-Day, the invasion of Normandy. Really the person that is exemplified as having won the war, even though George S. Patton may have some disagreement there.
Yeah, I'm sure he would.
And Omar Bradley sure comes into the picture as well. But Dwight D. was always given that indication, and we all love Ike.
I think he was the only 5-star general, wasn't he?
Yes, right, absolutely, in history. I don't think there's ever been another one.
I don't think so either.
So anyway, we all love Ike. That was the slogan, I love Ike. Ike's going to win. And his second trip around, 1956, again running as a Republican, again opposed by Adlai Stevenson, who was a Democrat. And I think, I'm not sure at that time, I think his term as governor was over, but he was still very much in the political forefront. And, oh, did we mention that Dwight Eisenhower's vice president was Richard M. Nixon?
No, you hadn't yet.
I guess we better mention that.
Yeah.
Because he's looming out there somewhere.
Yes.
So the opponent, again, as I said, the second term was Adlai Stevenson. The popular vote this trip around, 35,500,000 for Ike and 26 million for Stevenson. Even more people voting. Even more people voting.
Yeah, yeah. I think Stevenson was a pretty well-liked opponent, though.
He was. He was very popular individual. There wasn't any question about that at all.
Yeah.
And again, I think had Eisenhower not had everything that went on for him, with World War II, maybe it would have been a little bit closer.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
People were satisfied with what he did. The country was booming. Employment was high,
and
building
still
was taking place. A lot of houses were being built from.
And he's still considered one of the best presidents.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Can't take that away from me.
Right.
The electoral vote that year was 457-73. So, clear-cut winner. And actually, Stevenson was supposed to have 74 electoral votes, but one of those faceless electors at the last minute switched his vote over to Dwight Eisenhower.
Oh,
so, see, it does happen on occasion.
Yeah, yeah.
They've been talking about the faceless.
Coming up on the 6th of January, they're talking about that.
Yeah, well, but in the electoral vote that just took place here last week, or this week, they were talking about faceless
electors. That's right.
But none appeared. None appeared. All right, so now it's 1960. Eisenhower's done with his two terms, and the 35th President of the United States, John F. Kennedy, was elected as a Democrat. His first term, unfortunately, the only term he was able to be elected to, his opponent was Richard M. Nixon, who was the sitting vice president, was a Republican, a vice president for Dwight Eisenhower. Popular vote, ooh, boy, this was I remember this one particularly well.
I do too.
I remember watching it on television in black and white.
Yeah.
Popular vote for this election, 34,226,925 for Kennedy, to 34,114,124 to Richard Milhouse Nixon.
A nail-biter.
A difference of only 112,801 votes.
Yeah.
Came down to West Virginia.
Did it really?
Yeah,
oh, my.
Came down to West Virginia.
Huh.
The electoral vote, 303-219. Again, a nail-biter all the way around, and it just depended on states. Unfortunately, we all know where we were on November the 22nd, 1963, when Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, Texas, and was succeeded by Lyndon B. Johnson, who was sworn in on Air Force One before they left to come back to Washington, D.C. And we all remember that picture that's still burnt in our memories.
Yeah.
Of that swearing in
with Jackie in her blood covered
pink
outfit,
dress. Which we couldn't tell was pink at the time because we were still looking at black and white TV.
Yeah,
but unfortunately, changed the course of history all the way around.
Sure did. Yeah.
Johnson then, of course, served out the remainder of that term, which was really only about a year, a little over a year. Decided then to run for a term of his own in 1964 to become the 36th. Well, he was already the 36th president by virtue of his succession from Kennedy, but the 36th president of the United States on his own. His opponent then, that first and only term, as it turns out, on his own, was Barry M. Goldwater from Arizona, who was, I think, was he in the Congress or the Senate then?
One of the two. I don't remember which. Yeah,
He was Republican. Popular vote. As I remember, we considered that to be a landslide at the time.
Yeah.
43,100,000 to 27,100,000.
Yeah.
Look how many people are voting.
You know,
almost 70 million
wow.
people. The Electoral College total, 486 to 52. Very concise victory. Again, what's happening in the 60s? Vietnam is raging.
Goldwater was kind of the Vietnam the angry youth
right,
response.
Right, the poster boy for getting out.
Yeah.
The poster boy for getting out.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, of course, the Vietnam War is a lot of the reason why Lyndon decided not to run again.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that famous speech he made on
sure
TV
do.
To the American public when he said, "I shall not seek nor shall I accept the nomination of the Democratic Party for,
yep.
for your president of the United States." I can almost say it by heart.
Yeah.
So he ended that term, and the happy warrior stepped in, his vice president, the candidate, Hubert H. Humphrey, who, beloved Hubert, I loved him. He was a great guy. I was very sorry that he didn't win. But in 1968, the 37th president of the United States, Richard Milhouse Nixon, a Republican, was elected over Hubert H. Humphrey,
mm-hmm.
the happy warrior from Minnesota. And the third party candidate, George C. Wallace.
Oh, that's right.
The American
yeah.
Independent, right?
Yeah.
Who tossed his hat into the ring, was shot during the campaign.
I live less than a block from where he was shot. So.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Governor of Alabama at the time. The popular vote, 31,770,000 for Nixon, 31,270,000 for Humphrey.
Hmm.
Close.
Yeah.
With Wallace taking 9,901,000. So had Wallace not been in there, things could have been a
yeah,
lot different.
Yeah, could have been different.
The electoral vote was 302 to 191 to 5. Again, mm-hmm. that electoral vote could have changed had that popular vote changed.
Uh-huh.
So unfortunately, that's the way it shook out.
Yeah.
Nixon served his first term, I won't say without events, but the war raged on during that time.
Yeah, right.
One of his pledges was to bring the war to end, which didn't happen
right.
During that first term. His second term, 4 years later, he ran against George S. McGovern. We all remember George S. McGovern, the Democrat, the dove
yep.
Of the Senate. In that particular election, he was defeated handily, 45,700,000 to 28,300,000.
Yep.
521 electoral votes to 17, and again, we're now at that 538 electoral college vote number that we're at right now.
Okay.
So that's been that way for quite some time now.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think the war had a lot to do with that. Obviously, McGovern's standing on the war, there was so much opposition going on. I was at Ohio University at the time. A lot of riots taking place on campus, not only at Ohio University, but at other colleges throughout the
right.
country to get the soldiers out of Vietnam, and I think that had a lot of...
Everybody knows about Kent State. So.
Well, yeah, the Kent State thing, and of course, I think that had a lot of undue pressure on the election, both from both sides, you know, of the factor, depending on where you were at that particular time.
And everybody knows that I marched in the inaugural parade for Nixon. So.
Did you really?
I did. And with the Army Field Day.
So you were in the service at the time.
Yes, yes.
And, of course, we all know what happened on August the 9th of 1974. Nixon resigned office.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because of the Watergate scandal and the looming or impending doom that was on the horizon had he not chosen to resign. I'm sure he would have been impeached and probably kicked out of office and disgraced more so
yeah.
than what he was by resigning. I can remember, it's burned into my mind's eye watching his departing remarks
Me
on
too.
Television before he boarded Air Force One to be whisked off to, or boarded Marine One to be whisked off to Air Force One to leave, talking about his mother.
Mm-hmm.
With obvious tears in his eyes, with his family standing behind him, and Gerry Ford, congressman from Michigan, a long-serving member of Congress, who had been appointed as vice president when Spiro Agnew resigned, Nixon's vice president, who had been elected with him in the 1972 election. Gerald Ford, notoriety of being the only person to become the 38th president or to become president of the United States, never having been elected by the people of the United States mm-hmm. as either president or vice president.
Right. Now, he was from, I think, Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yes, that's
was.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
Which isn't too far from here.
Yeah.
You
absolutely.
Could make it in 8 hours.
And really
6 hours.
A great guy.
Yeah.
And really a great guy.
Seemed like.
I you know, the only problem that Ford basically encountered during his term as office, as I remember correctly, was the economy was in pretty bad shape.
It was, yes.
Came out with that whip and inflation now, that win button that everybody was supposed to wear around to promote the beating of inflation, which didn't much help.
No, buttons don't do it.
Buttons didn't do it. Unfortunately, Jerry was unsuccessful in his bid for re-election. I'm going to stop it there and just say that he went on to lose to Jimmy Carter in the election of 1976. And that's as far as I wanted to go with electoral votes, because most people that are listening to us now
know what went on.
Know what went on basically with Carter and then on. Carter, of course, losing then obviously in 4 years to Ronald Reagan because of what was happening over in Iran with the hostages. And again, I think that played out. I think that was a planned play out. I think those hostages could have been released before
that's what they
the
say.
Election, but they weren't.
Yeah. So. Well, we're down to a minute and a half.
So. Well, Glenn, I want to tell you I've had an enjoyable time doing
this is fantastic. The last two
meetings. I hope people have learned something and learned that presidential elections in the United States, even going back as far as George Washington, have not always been an easy thing.
Right.
They've not always been cut and dry. We've had incidents occur in the past. We have an incident occurring right now, which is nothing unusual, but we can only hope, we can only hope, Glenn, that democracy prevails no matter what.
Yeah, that's the truth. And, you know, it does kind of put into perspective how this, it's a bad thing that's going on right now, but we've had lots of bad things going on and gotten through
them. And we too shall survive this one.
Let's hope we can,
Glenn, thank you a lot.
Well, thank you for coming on.
If things go well, I probably am going to continue to do this as long as the pandemic rages.
Okay, I love it. It's fine, and I really enjoyed I learned a lot. It's fantastic.
I want to thank all those that are listening, and hopefully they've enjoyed it.
Okay. Fred Malone, it's great having you on. We'll have you on again next month.
See you in January.
All right. Have a good Christmas.
Hey, same to you, Glenn.
Bye-bye.
Merry Christmas to everyone.
All right, we're back here. Fred Malone, and I got to thank him for doing a fantastic job. We're going to have to get out of here in a few seconds, so I hope you join us next week. We'll be back on again. And
WWGH Radio,
bye-bye.
107.1 FM, the place for the holiday season. For legendary actress and star of the